Hi, I'm Colin Whiting.
And I'm Dave Wagner.
And this is My Mother, the podcast.
This week, it's a special week.
It is.
You know why?
Because Boris Johnson lost at the Supreme Court?
Nobody knows what you're talking about.
All these British people do.
Our gigantic British fan base that tunes in for the British political humor.
What is so special about this week?
We're talking about The Great Indoors.
Indoors?
Great Indoors is a comedy of sorts that was on from 2016 to 2017 on the CBS network.
It was on the CBS network.
And you know what it is?
The Great Indoors.
It's a whole lot of Joel McHale shitting on millennials for no good reason. Get ready for some puzzling generational conflict here on My Mother, the podcast. What's going on, Colin? What are you doing?
Oh, sorry. I got distracted because I was just staring at my phone because I'm a millennial and I can't take my eyes away from phone. And I was going to take a selfie with me and my goddamn support animal in our safe space because I'm a millennial. There, you've seen the show now. You can go home, everybody.
I mean, are you millennials? Are you feeling wounded from that characterization?
Yeah, it's because I take offense at everything because I'm a millennial and I'm just in a state of perpetually being offended.
So this is a puzzling show. This is. You may have heard of this as the show about Joel McHale shitting on millennials, and that's what this is.
You might also not have heard of this show.
You probably haven't heard of The Great Indoors, though, because it was not very successful.
It was, in fact, unsuccessful.
But let me tell you about My Mother, the podcast first.
Yeah.
And this is a podcast where Dave and Colin, I'm Dave, and that's Colin.
See,
we almost like pop culture archaeologists, we unearth the detritus of the past, and we show it to you and say, hey, this is dumb.
Except for when there's little gems, Manimal, I still remember you fondly.
There's a few specks around there. enough to remember a fonder time when we watched good shows.
Yeah, but we don't do that anymore.
But yeah, we look at single season shows and we try to figure out what happened there.
So what was going on here in this whole Great Indoors show?
Well, first thing I want to say about The Great Indoors is no show had a better chance to succeed because do you know what it had?
A good cast?
Well, yeah, but it also had a Big Bang Theory lead in during the height of the Big Bang Theory.
Oh, I didn't even look that up. That's incredible that it failed.
The Big Bang Theory could essentially print money in 2016.
This is like getting slotted after Seinfeld in 94. Holy crap.
Yeah, I don't really know what happened in that Big Bang Theory show. I mean, science of some sort.
Well, sort of. There's a Sheldon. And there's probably some other characters.
And it's sort of like this thing where they kind of turned like their female roommate into some kind of other.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, where she's like, she's not a person that we can talk to. She's like some kind of other that we have to like just imagine what her life is like.
Well, you sound like some millennial always complaining about the portrayal of women in media.
Wait, what? Huh? I'm sorry, I was looking at my phone.
Oh, did you get a selfie stick out? Because that's what kind of thing this show thinks millennials have.
I was dating on my Snapstagram.
Oh, man.
I was swiping right and left like nobody's business.
So in this show, Joel McHale plays, his name's Jack Gordon, which is about as masculine a name as they could find. And he's a great outdoorsman. He's a hiker, adventurer, wilderness, survivalist, Bear Grylls kind of guy. And he works for a magazine.
Yeah, we like the Bear Grylls comparison. That was something that I saw a fair amount of the time. Yeah,
it's pretty fair. And he works for this magazine, but the magazine shuts down its print edition.
Hey, but guess. Colin, what's the name of the magazine?
Oh, what was it called? Outside
something? Oh no, it's better than that.
Oh, what was it?
It's called The Outdoor Limits.
Oh, The Outdoor Limits
is very
like
good.
The Outer Limits, everybody.
This is maybe the best joke in the whole show.
Yeah,
I want to sum up this thing. Okay, so someone says thing indicative of cultural change. Like somebody says something like, oh, this is not a thing you're familiar with. Then Mikhail literally tells them to shut the fuck up, and that's it.
Yeah, pretty much that's you get 22 minutes of that per episode, along with some hackney-eyed romance plots.
Yeah, and so Mikhail, for some reason, takes control of this digital division of the magazine.
So here's what I don't get about the mag. They shut down their print edition, and they're going to just be digital, and they're going to do, like, real BuzzFeed kind of listicles, like the 10 things that you should see before you die kind of crap.
Well, that's what the millennial staff wants to do.
Oh, I know. And then, so they bring in Joel Mikhail to oversee this for some reason, instead of just firing him and saying, we don't need an outdoorsman anymore, goodbye.
You know what this is like? Do you know what this show is like? It's like Army of Darkness. When Bruce Campbell goes back in time, and like he's going like, listen up, screwheads. and that's the whole show. Is he's like, it's like this culture shock thing of him just telling this other group how they're wrong about everything.
And the showrunners in interviews want to present the show as though the millennials are giving it back to Gen X.
Oh, it's
just
a give
as much.
And take. Yeah,
it's not. It's just shitting on millennials for better or for worse. Mostly for worse. So that's the basic plot of this is outdoorsman Joel Mikhail has to go and oversee a digital magazine.
And you know where this takes place? Is Chicago.
Oh, Chicago town.
Which is a place that a surprising number of shows take place, but no movies.
And it's not the place I would associate an outdoors magazine with.
No.
I would think San Francisco, Seattle, like...
Also, if we're just digital only, why do we still have an office?
It doesn't make any sense
just
to me
whatsoever.
Just
work from home.
No. So, that's the premise of the show. Is,
but you know that there was some faith in this premise because guess what, this show is on DVD
direct.
That's right, you can purchase your very own collection of The Great Indoors.
It's like they thought this show would have some kind of cult following for some reason. I mean, I get that it's got some popular actors in it, but really.
And there's a lot of questions that occur as a result of this premise, and perhaps you're thinking, what is the point here at all?
I was thinking that a lot.
And I don't have an answer for that particular question.
No, and this is something that we'll revisit a lot. But the basic premise of the show doesn't work.
I think the idea is, okay, CBS has an older demographic for their audience. So why not embrace that and just like talk about all those things about new stuff that they hate?
But we'll also hire some cool younger actors so that maybe a younger person might tune in and enjoy it.
Well, it's very important for baby boomers to get a sense that their opposition is credible.
And this is what is so
This is why Fox News like continually trots out like supposed Democrats to debate people on there.
Oh yeah, people that were Democrats in 1997.
Right. You've got or that no one has ever heard of.
Oh, sure, yeah. This guy who, in 1997, was, like, the vice chair of a county party in Kansas.
You gotta have that at least appearance that this is a credible debate going on, even though the rules are completely rigged.
And so this is what's so weird about this show to me, and why the premise itself is broken to begin with. And I know we're not talking about why the show doesn't work yet, but we're talking about it now, I don't care. This show purports to be a competition, or not a competition, a fight, a struggle between Gen X, as represented by Joel Mikhail, and millennials, as represented by the sort of magazine staff. There's three or four people that are involved there. But no millennials actually care about Gen X, and no Gen X actually cares about millennials. And then Stephen Fry is farting around as a boomer, but he's not really doing anything or involved in this conflict at all.
I mean, I married a Gen Xer, so I definitely care about a Gen Xer.
And I am definitely a millennial, but I'm on the older side. You're pretty on the cusp. I mean, you're sort of.
I've just accepted that I'm in the millennial group now.
But I mean, like, both of us grew up where when we were kids, it was like you had dial-up internet, and I didn't have a cell phone until I went to college. I mean, this is.
But dial-up internet, it was kind of a thing that you needed to have as a child to make you appreciate anything later. Because the situation was just flat out absurd. Like, why did we need that particular series of noises?
I don't know, but you had to hear it every night, and your mom had to get off the telephone that she was talking on so that you could do this.
Stop talking on the phone, I need to use the internet, is not a conversation that would ever occur to anyone in any other time.
And most millennials, that wasn't their experience, but.
No, but that was like my high school. We were still using the dial-up.
Right, and for me, that was like an elementary middle school thing. My high school, we were on DSL. Back when that was still.
That was happening right at the end.
Right. So that's kind of the fundamental flaw with the show, is it's setting up the main conflict to be between millennials and Gen X, when millennials and Gen X, they don't care. It's, if you read the news, it's millennials and boomers hate each other, and Gen X kind of tries to stay out of the way.
There's such overlap there that, like, there's an entire, like, in-between generation that's just called Xennials to encompass that, pretty much 1975 to 1990. Like,
I've also heard it called like the Oregon Trail generation, like kids who played Oregon Trail on old Apple computers in elementary school and middle school, which
in
I
the library
did. Yep, that was how I grew up on computers.
That's what I was doing when I wasn't talking to girls.
Wow.
This isn't a great show.
No, it's not.
No,
it's got a pretty good cast. So Jack Gordon, our main character, is played by Joel McHale. I love Joel McHale. I don't care who knows it.
Wow. I mean, you've heard it here first. Colin's making a commitment.
I'm committed to Joel McHale. No, he hosted Talk Soup for a long time, which whatever, but he's in Community and he's great.
Yeah, he does this thing where like he puts his head up high when he starts a sentence. And so that like you can't really see that his forehead is very large. And then he gradually drifts downward so that, like, eventually all you can see is the forehead.
Yes.
So every single time it's up and down.
And when he does the down, his eyes go up in just, like, the world's greatest glower. He's a very great glower.
And that's when you just want to give him all of your worldly possessions.
And every time he speaks, everything is enunciated very particularly with very important pauses.
He's a good actor who usually picks good things, and I don't know what he's doing here.
I don't either. It's incredible because he is an incredibly charismatic actor, and every time he's on the screen, all the other characters feel like they're sort of community theater actors, and he's just sort of holding the stage. And then when he leaves and the other characters are talking, you kind of tune
out.
And
they're all like, hey, where's Joel McHale?
Hey, remember that guy who everyone liked listening to? Can he come back?
Where's Poochie?
Where's Poochie? Dude, every time I'm watching the show and Joel McHale's not on it, I'm asking, where's Joel McHale?
And I there's this thing where, like, every time I write adventure reporter in my notes, I just, like, write it in quotations. So it's like, he's an adventure reporter.
Yeah, here's a problem with Joel McHale's character. Joel McHale's great. He's not an adventurer.
No, where this is a very big part of my problem with this show is that they have a... Whoever wrote this had a very clear character in mind for this, that, like, this is an alpha male man's man, like...
A guy with hair on his chest.
Oh, yeah, and, like,
Joel McHale waxed
all that shit off ages ago.
He's too prissy for this role, and I say that, like, as a guy who likes Joel McHale a lot, but he's too well-coiffed to be an outdoorsman.
These were running jokes in Community that this is, like, his archetype.
Yes,
he's a guy who spends too much money on hair product and shit like that. And
then he would talk about being a man, and then Britta would say, like, oh, yeah, you say you're a man, but you spent an hour in front of the mirror this morning on your makeup. And he'd go, what?
And then he'd be like, talk to the hand, Britta.
Oh. I just did the talk to the hand gesture.
He did.
For those who aren't watching me right now.
It was extra sassy.
So in... You're starting off your show with a lead who's a really magnetic personality and also really miscast.
Okay, so that's the protagonist, and he starts out as like a very unlikable fish out of water, like, oh god, why is everything changing around me, and can I stand it?
Right.
And then he pretty much stays there, but people like start to hate it less, and that's pretty much his progression.
Yeah, that's his character arc, is people who worship the ground that he walks on, that is to say millennials, at first they think, oh my god, this guy's a dick, and then they gradually come to be like, oh no, he was right.
Which
it's
proves,
us, the kids, the children are wrong.
Which absolutely proves that this is a boomer product, by the way.
Which is amazing. So the only boomer in the show that makes a regular appearance is played by Stephen Fry, and he sort of owns the whole company and runs the show. But
and what's his name? What's his name in the show?
His name is Roland.
Roland.
What? Yeah.
Roland.
Roland.
Come on.
It's, again, it's someone who's incredibly a talented, magnetic guy. Stephen Fry, if you don't know who he is, which you should, he was...
You know who Stephen Fry is. Stop it.
Yeah, piss off. If you don't know who Stephen Fry is, fucking get a book or a YouTube.
I mean, I don't know what book is going to help them out.
Probably his autobiography.
It's like, I've got these three books here to represent books. Let's see. The Trial, Camus' The Plague, and Stephen Fry's autobiography.
You get any Jeeves and Wooster book, and you just read Jeeves in a very posh British accent, and then that's just Stephen Fry.
Do you think that's good?
No.
No? Okay.
Wait, so, Jeeves and Wooster, or the
Jeeves
joke?
And Wooster is very good.
Yes, it is.
I've watched that in its entirety a few times.
Oh, we have that on DVD.
Would you steal a car?
Would you steal a Jeeves and Wooster DVD?
I would absolutely steal a Jeeves, let me tell you that right now.
I could use a Jeeves sometimes.
Can you imagine how much easier...
My wardrobe is terrible.
I mean, I don't even do that much around the house, but like that would still... be extremely useful.
Don't admit that in front of your Gen X wife.
I mean, it's just not getting done is the thing.
So he's in like one scene per episode, so it's kind of not worth saying much more about him than we already have. The boomer, though, I think we talked about this earlier. It's like the boomer should be someone who's really gruff and doesn't have time for any of this bullshit. And Stephen Fry is like Stephen Fry, so he's a very paternal, warm person. But it should be, I think you said Clint Eastwood, and that would have been an amazing casting decision.
Joel McHale. Need you to come into my office.
Oh, what is it that you need to say?
I can't take your prissy bullshit anymore, Joel McHale.
I'm not the prissy one, it's all these millennials.
Mr. Eastwood, I mean, could you at least use the name that's provided in the script for me instead of continuously calling me Joel McHale?
No. I don't have time for this.
Over here is an empty chair. Do you remember when he did that?
Yes, it was at the 2012 RNC.
Yeah, the Republican National Convention. It was amazing.
It was a life-changing moment for a lot of people.
Yeah, there's like this great thing that you don't get to see very often of when someone is telling a joke or using like a format for a joke that they think is very well known, but no one knows what on earth they're doing. And so you're just watching them like grin about like thinking that you're all shared in this joke and no one is shared in this joke. And it's very sad.
One of the great joys in this life is seeing someone who is supremely confident, like kind of worn down gradually and having to like acknowledge that, oh, this didn't work at all, and I screwed something up. And that's sort of where we get at the end of that sequence.
Yeah. Anyways.
Clint Eastwood's not in this.
He's not, but he should have been.
Yeah.
We also have Stephen Fry's daughter is Brooke, played by Susanna Fielding, who's mostly a theater actor. She's definitely there. She's a person.
Yeah, she's fine.
Yeah, she and Joel McHale, I guess. I'm just going to use Joel McHale. I don't know the character's name.
I mean, the character's name is Jack, so it's not that big a difference.
Close enough. Jay. Yeah, they hooked up in the past, and now she's his boss. Fine.
They
whatever.
Have a history.
Ooh!
And also, by the way, like, nothing ever really comes of it in the show, so don't worry about it.
No, even in the finale. Did you watch the finale?
I did.
Yeah, they act like it's going to come to something, and then it comes to nothing.
No. Instead, we get a bunch of stuff where, like, Joel McHale is acting with no discernible motive. And, yeah, never mind. Yeah. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of other characters, though, right?
There we have the whole millennial cast.
The millennial kind crew. Of
skipping over. So our lead millennial, as it were.
The lead millennial.
The lead millennial. Millennial number one, a.k.a.
Job
Clark.
Search needed lead millennial.
That's what the casting call must have been. We need three millennials, maybe a fourth to be the receptionist.
Job description. Corralling your fellow millennial.
Oh, and because this is a TV show made in the 2010s, of course, we need three millennials of three different races, please.
Well, yeah, and, like, that would be one thing if it wasn't pointed out throughout
the
show.
Annoying fucking thing about this. It's like they went to the trouble of making a diverse cast, and they couldn't just fucking leave well enough alone, could they?
Also, it's like a punchline to Joel McHale that these people were born of different races.
He has a joke in that first episode where he comes in and he's just kind of like, oh, I see you're all very diverse. Well, fuck you, dude.
What are we supposed to do with that?
I'm sorry we're not all white.
It's like, checkmate. You guys sure were born of different races.
So, in keeping with this show's diversity quotient, millennial number one is the white millennial.
Lead millennial,
Clark.
Clark, that's right.
He is played by Christopher Mintz-Plasse, who most people, if you're weird, will know him as McLovin in Superbad.
I've never seen that.
Oh, well, it's definitely a movie.
It was one of those things where, like, so many people kept quoting it at me that I just was determined to never see it. I'm putting my foot down and saying no. No yeah. World.
No, you know what? Fuck you, Superbad.
I'm never going to
see you.
Yeah, you're trying to make me a part of this apparently cultural phenomenon, and I'm saying no.
And that was a cultural phenomenon like 2007 or so.
Yeah. People were still quoting that shit at me in like 2017.
I'm surprised they're not quoting it at you in 2019.
I just know too many old people.
Wow, okay, Joel McHale.
Yeah. No, I'm a reverse Joel McHale.
So Clark is like, he's the sort of like nerdy, insecure, dorky weakling one who like regards Joel McHale as a god, and he wants to be like him, but he can't because he's just this soft millennial.
But it's like he's also not like he's not exactly a follower in that, like, hey follower, that's like Twitter, which millennials are just all over.
Oh man.
And, yeah,
you sure zinged him.
It's not like he would stop doing the stuff that he does if Jack/Joel McHale was like, this is stupid. You know, like, he's still individualistic. Is outwardly insecure.
He's outwardly insecure. He's a fan. But if Joel McHale said, hey, go to the gym 3 times a week, then Clark would say, no, that's not for me.
He's weak. He's like a worm man, right?
Yeah, I guess a worm is probably the closest animal to what he is.
And then we have Emma. She's a social media pro, which means that she looks at her phone a lot.
Right. She's played by Christine Coe from Hawaii Five-0, and that's you already described her.
Yeah, and
character.
We're doing that thing where we have no vocal affect whatsoever, because that's millennials are offended by everything you see, but they also have no feelings.
Right. So she's sort of a person that's there.
And I don't even remember who else was.
Speaking of people who are there, Mason, who's played by someone named Sean Brown, and I didn't recognize anything from his IMDb.
I do recall there's a joke that's told several times that, like, no one knows if he's gay or not, and that's pretty funny.
That is, like, an ongoing joke, is like, eh? This guy is kind of effeminate, isn't he? And
but
you're
what,
kind of like, not really. Would it matter
was,
if he was?
Colin. Can you imagine?
Oh my god, that would be a scandal.
Can you imagine?
I need to read a listicle with the 15 most scandalous things that would happen if it turned out that Mason and Graydon Doors was gay.
Can you imagine like working with a gay person in 1811? Wait, what year is this?
Yes, in 1811, yeah. It would be a weird thing. Actually, it'd probably be less weird, to be honest.
I don't know. I don't know what time is. I don't know how time works. You know this about me.
So, yeah. You're a millennial.
And then there's Esther, the receptionist, and she does something or other.
She's the one that's crazy and weird.
Is she?
For like one scene per episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember the character at all.
She's the one that, like, they're like, you know, oh, what, is the internet working? She's like, no, I can't check my nanny cam. I didn't know you had a kid. Well, the nanny's for me. And you're like,
oh, man.
Okay. Is that a joke? Am I laughing?
She just wants somebody to take care of her.
She's also, I think, like, she's the, like, sexually promiscuous.
Oh, is she? See, I missed that entirely.
Ooh, yeah, there's not, well, it's again.
Was there like this whole
episode.
Level of nuance that I missed on this apparently very good show?
Did you watch this show?
I mean, not really.
Did you just have it on in the background?
I mean, like, I didn't even do that exactly.
Oh, you're such a lazy millennial.
Ugh, so much going on my phone.
Apparently, also there was a. Jack had a girlfriend for an arc of about 5 episodes played by Maggie Lawson from Psych, but I
missed
those
that
episodes.
Entirely, yeah.
And I was like, oh, that sucks because I like her.
Yeah, she's
oh, well.
Good.
Am I going to go back and find that episode? I'm not.
No, that's like, that doesn't seem like it would be a very good couple.
No. I don't know what her character was like in this show, but if it's anything like her character on Psych.
So we get to how is this greenlit? And the answer is,
So the producer of this show, the creator, is a guy named Mike Gibbons, and he was a producer and writer on Tosh.0, The Ellen Show, but most importantly on The Late Late Show, and especially The Late Late Show when James Corden was hosting.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he said that he got the idea from working with millennials when he was working on The Late Late Show, and he was like, well, these soft idiots, I should make a show about them.
You probably shouldn't have admitted that.
Yeah, right? Like, but he did, and there's a lot of backlash about that.
Yeah, no one wants to work with him now.
No, so.
Except for Clint Eastwood. I think these millennials are all soft, too. Come over to my office. I think there's a market for this. I just gotta make a movie where I use a bunch of racial slurs, but it's...
Isn't that basically what that one Clint Eastwood movie is about, like, the car?
That's Gran Torino. Yes! Nutshell. It's super uncomfortable.
Isn't that, like, all it is him sitting on his porch and, like, yelling racial slurs at people?
Think of a racial slur for any Asian person, and that shows up in that movie, and it's very uncomfortable.
And then, the best part of that movie is the credits.
It's my character.
The credits when he inexplicably... Clint Eastwood sings a song called Gran Torino.
Fuck, you're right. I forgot about that. Jesus Christ.
I don't know if it's an original song or not, but I mean, here's hoping.
It would have to be, right?
And it's as angelic a singing voice as you would think.
Oh my God, I wish I had like an album
Gran
of like...
Gran Torino.
I want an album that's like Clint Eastwood sings the classics, and it's like all the best like crooner hits from the 50s and 60s.
I want him to sing contemporary stuff.
What, like a
California Girls?
Just Clint Eastwood sings the songs of Katy Perry.
I kissed a girl. I think I liked it. I hope my boyfriend don't mind it. Flavor of her cherry chapstick.
I don't think you would like singing that song at all.
And CBS is, you know, it's an old person network, right?
Yeah. Do you remember in the old Dark Knight movie, the Heath Ledger's the Joker? You got Christian Bale's the Batman. You remember that movie?
Vaguely, yeah.
You remember back in that Batman movie? You remember there's a scene where a guy's just sitting on a big pile of money, and the Joker just burns that money up.
I do remember that.
That's what the show feels like. It's like, fuck it. We'll throw some money at these famous actors and see
if
it works.
That's because the Joker is insane.
Oh, he just... Some people just want to watch the world burn.
He's just so evil, Colin.
And then later he burns the money, so it's kind of like...
Yeah. And there's a guy on the money, as I recall.
Yeah, I think it's that Hong Kong banker guy. Yeah, he's like, no purpose.
He's not interested in making friends with the mafia.
No. Oh. I'm like a wild dog.
How many times have, like, I heard that story about, like, when he was hitting the button to blow up the hospital in that one scene? That was totally ad-libbed.
Yeah, okay, great.
Okay. Did you know that that was totally ad-libbed?
This is IMDb trivia is one of my favorite and least favorite things in the world. I love
8 versions of that fucking thing.
So that's how the show got made, was they burned a bunch of money and that guy was like, well, I worked on their show with these millennials and they sucked.
Was there any rational way to think that Joel McHale was the next big thing and they just had to lock this man down?
I don't know about lock him down, but I mean, Community was a very popular, like,
ratings disaster.
Ratings disaster. That's the problem, right? Like, an incredibly popular with critics and with a very loyal fan base.
Critics but can't, not a critics wide can't fan give base. You no green, Colin.
Well, and that's the thing, right, though? You're hoping that, like, this loyal fan base will come with you and that this person that critics love will be able to appeal to a broader audience.
To an audience who has absolutely never seen him in anything before.
To people like me. You know who I like is that Joel McHale. He's all right. He's an honorary boomer.
I don't like his Gen X ways, but... Joel McHale, that Community is that op-ed,
a little
that
too op-ed, much time on his hair.
That's some funny stuff.
Now,
let me tell you about this chair.
Yeah, I think that was kind of what we're going for, right? It's like we got Stephen Fry is sort of again not a popular in America actor, but a popular actor. We got Joel McHale is well liked, and I think there was the chance that he could have been a breakout kind of star. And Talk Soup was not unpopular in the way Community was.
I feel like we don't understand how popular anything is based on what we've watched.
It is a little like, it does kind of mess with your brain.
Sometimes I'll look at the top 20 for TV shows and I'll be like, I have never heard of this show before.
And then I'll go back and look at the shows that I've said, yes, you should watch this on My Mother the Podcast. And I'm like, whoa, what was I thinking?
I don't know if we've ever said this on the podcast itself. We've certainly said it on social media. But the Fall Spectacular episode of a year ago was a trail of tears.
I think we batted about 2 for 10 on that one.
I think we managed to say that every single show that was incredibly successful could not possibly be renewed.
God friended me.
There's that one.
Manifest is the other big one.
Manifest. There was the one about, I think there was the one about, like, the aliens in, was it like another
Roswell?
Yeah,
like,
wasn't that renewed?
Kind of thing? I think so.
Yeah, that was renewed.
Connors definitely.
Absolutely. Wow.
I said that Cool Kids looked like it might be fun, and that got canceled.
Oh, and the one we said was definitely going to succeed did not.
Yeah.
So the tone of this program is probably pretty clear at this point.
Yeah.
It's Joel McHale comes in. He's tanned. He's buff. He's like full of zingers. And like,
and then Christopher Mintz-Plasse shows up and he's just nervous.
And what the thing is, like, the millennials that he's insulting don't even seem particularly interested in the exchange.
Nobody seems interested in any exchanges in this show. Nobody gave a shit. You could tell from their body language.
Like, there's an actual participation trophy joke.
Oh, no, this show is rife with dumb jokes from, like, 2005.
And it's like, stuff your Fox News watching uncle would say.
Do you get this literal exchange that I wrote down because it was so fucking terrible? You get, I heard a millennial's feelings.
Oh, yes.
What are their feelings not hurt? Hey, see?
It's all kind of, if you look at it from a certain perspective, it's all kind of
terrible,
a tragic show, because it's Joel McHale fighting against the fact that no one gives a shit about him or his perspective.
No, it's such a bad miscasting, because this guy is such a magnetic personality and they put him in this show where it's like, hey, you're fighting the good fight against millennials as a Gen Xer?
And it doesn't matter how well phrased he makes any of his insults or how often he makes them, no one cares.
And here's the weird thing is that, like, it more often than not, it comes off as him seeing just kind of petty, and the millennials as being, like, genuinely people trying to have fun and not really understanding how to navigate the world. And he just comes off as a dick.
You'd think the idea here would be, okay, each of them can teach each other something. That never happens.
He never really teaches them much, and they certainly never teach him anything.
But do we, the audience, learn anything here?
I mostly reasons not to watch the show. I learned a lot of those.
Here's the weirdest thing about this show. The weirdest thing about this show is that the cast is actually very good.
Yes.
They're not given a thing to work with, and
no,
they're all still pretty likable.
I liked all of the cast. There's not a single person that I was... The receptionist is the closest one, but even then, I kind of liked everyone.
Yeah, and I forgot she existed. But everybody else...
She had my favorite joke in the whole show.
What was it?
Joel McHale reaches into a jar of jelly beans on her desk, and he goes, "Ugh, some of these are wet." And she goes, "That's weird, they should all be wet." That's a fun little joke. It's a good gag.
Why are they wet, Colin?
I don't know. See? It's a fucking mystery.
Why is there silverware in the pancake drawer? There's some parts of this that actually at least made me smile. Like,
yeah.
Stephen Fry has this thing where he tells Joel McHale in front of the staff that there's an emergency in his office, and like, it can only be solved by, like, Mr. Jack Daniels. and like, you know, and then they go back there for a drink. And then they just repeat this in almost every episode. It's a little cute.
It's a fun little running joke. In the finale, it's there's been a disaster. It's a mudslide. Okay.
All right, we're really reaching already.
Well, episode 22.
And let's just stop for a second and think how, with this premise... Hammer they time. Produced 22 episodes.
Boy, it's a stretch sometimes, because some of these episodes feel a little...
I did not watch anything close to 22 episodes, and I don't know where I'd be today if I did.
I don't know what other plots they could have had than the ones I watched, but they sure tried to... You know what they do? There's a lot of romantic filler where it's like, will they, won't they, between Emma
they won't,
and Clark.
By the way, they won't.
Well, at the end, they do. But then they don't.
Oh, no,
but
those
then they
two.
Do.
Okay.
Oh, you're talking about Jack and what's her name? Brooke? Yeah, no.
Brooke.
They don't.
So this show kind of highlights the difference, an important difference to get down in your life.
Yes.
The difference between good and competent.
This show is so well made.
It definitely is.
Everyone is such a good actor.
The timing is very good.
The sets are good.
Even the writing with the premise in mind, like, they've written probably the best thing material you can get out of this god-awful premise.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The comic timing is there. After the first episode, at least, nothing really just makes you go, oh, what the fuck are we doing?
This is definitely a case of, like, the pilot has the most hacky millennial jokes, and then they kind of ease off on that. It's kind of a problem, too, though, because they kind of ease off the premise of the show.
Right, and then they don't have anything.
Generic sitcom blandness, and you're like, okay.
And then all you're left with is this pretty innocuous laugh track.
And you're left with, like, plots like, oh, Mason is the guy who knows all the secrets in the office, but now Emma knows a secret that he doesn't.
And you're like, who the fuck is Mason?
And that's a plot that could have been in any show in any decade, played by anybody, and it's just, it doesn't feel very fresh.
You know, I don't think I like this show.
I definitely don't like this show.
And the reason why I don't like this show is because it's mean-spirited, and it doesn't want to own up to how mean-spirited it is, so it won't commit, and so we're stuck with nothing.
That's actually...
The whole idea is millennials are wrong, and we have to tell them they're wrong. Like, there's a chance for that not to be the premise of this show, but we don't embrace that. Like, it should be a matter of... It turns out both generations, Gen X and millennials, I guess, have...
Because that's what we're doing here, I guess.
For no reason. They have a lot to share with each other, and there's just so much each of them can learn. But we're not interested in doing that. We're just interested in literally talking at these millennial characters who really do not care. So it's just Joel McHale being mean, but they also don't want him to be an unlikable character. So there's like little bits here and there where they show some empathy, but he's not changing at all.
No, at the end of the day, they present Joel McHale as being very mean and also right. And it's like, at the end of the day, that just leaves you with this kind of sad feeling of like, well, the mean guy was correct.
Which again, this is for an older generation. This should be an older generation because there's not a lot of Gen Xers going around thinking we're right vis-a-vis millennials versus
there
Gen
just
X.
Aren't.
And we need to have that viewpoint validated. Like that
it's not
doesn't
the,
that's not a viewpoint that exists.
It's not the cultural conflict of the 2010s.
And there's no Gen Xers going around, oh fuck you lady with your emotional support animal, or oh fuck you guy with a long job title.
It's a weirdly mean-spirited show.
Oh, and they shit on podcasts too.
But I know, it's like episode 1 or 2 and they're kind of like, ah, fuck it, everybody has a podcast, idiots.
Yeah, so?
Stings, man.
I mean, so what?
What's wrong with that?
So you're right. Yeah. Most of us have podcasts and they're not good. What do you want? Like you want a participation trophy?
A lot of boomers had a fucking shitty band in their garage. Like,
yeah, because boomers can't figure out how to record a podcast.
See, and if they made that joke, it might have been funny, but instead Stephen Fry's just farting around his back office so that they don't have to pay him to show up for more than a day at a time.
My second complaint.
Can I piggyback off your first complaint, actually?
Was that even a complaint? Was that, I started out like, yeah, that was my complaint.
Yeah.
Before that, I talked about the cast being good. So we've had a good thing and a bad thing.
I want to
There's going to be another bad thing.
I want to piggyback off both of those, though, which is the cast is very good. The show is very mean-spirited. And I think a part of why those two are so frustrating and so powerful in combination is because there's not actually a lot of chemistry between the cast members. I think they have good material and they deliver it well, but they don't actually feel like they're bouncing off each other. They feel like they're delivering lines against each other. And that really just really drags the show down for me because it feels to me like you've got a bunch of actors in this room and it doesn't feel like, you know, you talk about a good comedy, like take Community, for instance. And
which we both, for the record, really, really like.
Yes, the first 3 seasons, i.e. Community, are TV perfection. And those characters and those actors feel like they're enjoying being in each other's presence. Or when they're struggling with each other, it feels real. And this show never hits that.
Community is widely known as Clint Eastwood's favorite show. But yeah. they just couldn't reproduce it for that demographic again.
I love that Chevy Chase.
Oh, unironically, right?
he says out loud good ideas. The things that I'm thinking.
Do you think Clint Eastwood watches that show and at the end he's like, what? What did he do wrong?
I don't understand why they're mad at Chevy.
Anyway.
So,
as we've kind of talked about, some basic decisions here are downright bizarre.
I hate those basic decisions.
Decisions. McHale is such a rugged man, right? Isn't that how you think about him?
Yeah, that's
just a mountaineer. this is kind of a beanpole guy, right?
This is like a guy on magazine covers and not outside magazine.
But he'd be on the cover of like GQ, not on the cover of like an outdoor magazine.
He probably has been on the cover of GQ.
Oh, sure. Yeah, probably doing that thing where he puts his head all the way up.
Or where it's all the way down and he's glowering.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Do you think it's one of those 3D magazine covers where when you turn it, the image changes?
If so, I'd buy that.
Oh my God. Can we? I gotta go.
Put that on my wall and just look up and down.
Just like him.
That's a good Friday night right there. And he refers to like the digital team at work as the daycare division. And it's like, how old do you think Joel McHale is? He's like, what, 35 years old in this show?
He looks about as old as we do in this show, but they treat him like he's an old grumpy man.
I don't
man.
Think he's like that much older than I am.
No, he is, though. Do you know,
oh, he is?
Are you kidding me? Joel McHale was born in 1971.
Holy shit. Yeah, so he's a tried and true Gen Xer.
But he doesn't look
right in the thick of it.
He doesn't look it because he's so well manicured.
But you know what he is not is a boomer, and they sure want him to be.
They treat him like he is a boomer.
There's, I think it's the second episode where he acts as if he has never heard of a dating app before.
Oh no,
he's completely like oblivious when it's mentioned that like these millennials are using dating apps. And this is 2016 or 2017, I can't remember. And there is no possibility that this like man in his late 30s, early 40s, I guess, is unaware of what a dating app is.
Certainly not by 2015. I mean, come on. Like, this is... By 2015, everybody knows what, like, Match.com and OkCupid and all that bullshit
they're like,
is.
And the bar owner, who is his best friend and whose name I cannot recall... There's like two locations.
Eddie.
Yeah, there's two locations. There's the office and there's the bar. And he's like, dating apps are totally mainstream now. Yeah, it's been that way since like iPhones existed.
It's been that way. Boomers know that it's been that way since like 2007 or whatever.
Is that eHarmony thing still, does that still exist?
Oh my God. I hadn't thought about that in years, but those commercials used to be everywhere.
I remember in like 2005 I was like on all of the dating sites before I met my current wife, and like they would not take me because I was not sufficiently Christian. Like I took their questionnaire and they're like, I don't think this is right for you.
Oh, you should go to plentyoffish.com.
I was rejected by eHarmony.
That's rough, man.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Never really gotten over it.
Now it's all Tinder and Grindr.
Do you think people are still swiping right on Clint Eastwood?
I would.
Yeah, same. Nothing really makes sense, right? Like, there's motivations by the end of the series run. Like, they start to get really hazy. Like... Joel McHale is really interested in hooking Clark and Emma up, and we have no idea why.
Dude, he spends... It's not just him. It's him. It's Joel McHale and Brooke. They spend that entire finale just trying to get Clark and Emma to hook up for no reason.
There's a lot of weird perspectives going on. Like, and Clark loves Emma.
Why?
No one knows.
Why?
And how long has this been established? Who knows?
A dozen episodes. Who cares?
Yeah. But he insists on calling her ex to make sure it's okay to make a move. And why? I'm like, who is this character? I mean, we've previously sort of tried to establish him as feminist, but like, this is a patriarchal thing.
Yes. And then Joel McHale's character, instead of hooking up with Brooke, calls Brooke's boyfriend to be like, hey, you should tell her how much you love her.
That's
not growth. I have to see growth.
You want Joel McHale to show you a growth?
Ah,
I mean, yeah, a little bit.
Like, I don't know.
A little, yeah. It's very strange. Like, the last episode gets all of these really bad Hollywood dating wisdom viewpoints in there that really seem out of place in this show about millennials.
No, I'm sorry. I have to interrupt because Clark finally tells Emma, oh, I do love you, but not really, but it's fine. Whatever. They hook up. And then the next day, it's like, oh, she was drunk. She doesn't remember everything, but she secretly does. Then why doesn't she
stay
just
tuned?
Say it.
Well, actually,
I don't want to stay tuned.
Actually, don't stay
make
tuned
any
because
sense.
It was never addressed because there were no further episodes.
It got canceled.
But there's like, Joel is considering trying to get Emma drunk to make her like hook up with Clark, and no, like there's stuff like. Brooke says at some point, there's nothing more attractive than a man who goes for what he wants. And it's, oh, what are we doing here?
Dude, even Clark is like, oh, man, you know, Emma just broke up with her boyfriend and she's having a rough time at work and all this family stuff. Are we sure she's not too vulnerable? And that's played as a joke.
Starts to like Clark because he fights for her. Look, guys, I need you to listen to me here. I need you all to listen. This idea... Yes, that you can make a woman like you by temporarily displaying a personality trait is insane.
Especially if said personality trait is, I will punch your ex-boyfriend.
Okay, attraction is a thing. You can't fabricate it.
Yes, so is personality.
If they don't feel it, You can't make them feel it by doing a thing.
And you can't, especially not by, like, plastering over a fake personality, like putting some spackle over a fucking 10-inch diameter hole in the wall.
It's this show is just full of this gross perspective that, like, well, Clark, you just gotta keep trying.
Well, you sound like a millennial.
You sound like a millennial.
You just talk about how this show's not feminist enough.
Why can't you just like watch it and enjoy it?
Yeah, why does everything have to be political, millennial?
Why can't you just sit in this chair over here? Take a load off.
Can I tell you my least favorite joke in the show?
Please do.
It's from that last episode. And Joel McHale's getting ready to fly away to Brazil to do some.
Oh, yeah. Poochie goes back to his home planet at the end.
That's how this show ends. Is Joel McHale shows up in episode 1, and in episode 22, he's like, bye.
Yeah, they just say, oh, I'm going to Brazil for 3 months. See ya.
So he says, I have to go catch my prop plane to Brazil. You got to get to these Brazilian flights early, or they give up your seat to a bale of cocaine. Now, pause. I'm just going to run through everything that I think is wrong with this joke. Prop plane. Nah, you got flights going from Chicago to Rio
every
day.
Wait, they have flights that go to Brazil now?
Yeah, Rio de Janeiro, not a small
city, it
turns out.
It's just everything, isn't it?
Yeah, you got to get to those flights early, or they give up your seat. That's not how that works, but okay. To a bale of cocaine. Why are you sending bales of cocaine from Chicago to Brazil? I think what they're going for is a Latin America plane cocaine joke. But it's the wrong country and it's the wrong direction.
What you're missing is that you should be forgetting all that and be thinking about how the rampant drug cartels in Latin America are very funny.
Oh, right. See, I mostly got distracted by Joel McHale's jawline.
I mean, I never paid attention to anything else.
What is there? That stubble?
I was just watching him put his head up and down.
And just delivering every line like this.
There was no second season.
No, there was not.
That's why we're talking about it.
That's the prerequisite.
And that's strange because this didn't really perform badly, despite thinking that it really should have performed badly.
No. I think that kind of goes back to what you brought up to my great surprise at the beginning of the show, though, which is if you've got a Big Bang Theory lead-in, you've got high expectations.
Man, this must have just been shedding viewers like crazy.
Yeah. You can't be skating by with a modest performance post-Big Bang Theory. You've got to be hooking... they're already hooked. You got to be reeling them in. And if you're not doing that, then you're out.
People are just, millions of people just actively changing the channel when they see this thing on.
I gotta imagine that, yeah, some CBS exec was looking at those numbers and 8:31 rolled around and everyone switched to NBC and he said,
What do you think would make this work?
I think you gotta get, the Joel McHale character has to be a baby boomer. He's gotta be older and he's gotta learn too.
He's gotta be Clint Eastwood.
He's gotta be Clint Eastwood. And I'm serious, like... I love Stephen Fry. I really do. I think he's fantastic. Throw him to the curb. He doesn't belong in this show.
What's a Google ad word? What's this old British guy doing in my chair?
Do you think Clint Eastwood gets along with Stephen Fry, or do you think they know each other? No.
I don't think they know each other, and I think if they did, they wouldn't like each other.
I think Stephen Fry has, at least on one occasion, or possibly multiple occasions, purposely not gone to an event because he's known Clint Eastwood was there.
I think they've gone to like a Hollywood event, and Stephen Fry has seen Clint Eastwood and avoided that contact, and Clint Eastwood has seen Stephen Fry and thought, who's that guy? Oh, well.
Do you think Stephen Fry has ended conversations so that he can turn his head away?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I 100% believe that.
I think one thing that might make it work, and it's kind of the counterintuitive way to do it, is to make it meaner.
Mm.
If
okay. Go on.
It's already mean, but they don't want to embrace that. Maybe if they did, you at least would have something to work with. Because this just doesn't want to even use the tone that it's established. So, like, what if we don't have Joel McHale, but we have, like, someone like Clive Owen from Closer?
Oh, man, Clive Owen would be great.
Oh, look at you. Look at you millennials.
Do you mean Clive Owen from 2004's King Arthur?
No, just Closer. just slagging them all off.
Oh, my. You monsters.
Dude, that actually, like, Clive Owen would be fun in this role. Why not?
You're looking at your phones.
I actually agree with you, because for me, the funniest jokes in the show were the ones that were weird, or the ones that were like had a tinge of if not meanness, then edginess.
I want him to be making people cry. That's really where we need to be at.
You can go that way, or what you can have, if let's say you wanted to stick with the hacky sitcom route, okay? What you do is you have Joel McHale and you have the millennials, and they're always button heads and they're at odds, and they realize that the real problem is Clint Eastwood.
And then they have a violent revolution.
Yes. Or just at the end of every episode,
Stephen Fry's head on a pike.
Wow, Jesus. Yeah. I was going to say, wow, it's a sad image.
It's going to happen.
No, at the end of every episode, you know, this is the hacky part, because it ends the same way every time, but they realize that the real problem all along has been the baby boomers.
What are you guys looking at me for?
What? But I gave you all the resources you needed. A toothpick, a paperclip. Haven't you ever seen MacGyver?
Is that how, like, a newsroom works?
Yes. Because this is a news reporting agency.
It's kind of like a listicle reporting agency, right?
Actually, it's so weird how little time these people spend in front of computers, given what their jobs are.
They seem to be... They've got, like, the get-around-a-conference-table part of being in an office, right? Yeah. But that's really their whole job, is, like, just one long conference meeting.
Yeah, I never see them like tippy typing away, and like Joel McHale's leaning over them watching them tippy type away or anything like that. There's that guy that lives in that tent.
Yeah, I didn't really understand what was going on there.
I think he lives in a tent and he makes a joke once every five episodes.
Okay, well, the classic way, the classic way to make this work, and the easiest way, is to make this both sides learn something. Like, you know, maybe, and I thought this was where they were going, and maybe it's where they wanted to be going in the first episode. Maybe Joel McHale's experience can be mixed with their digital savvy to create something that's both authentic but also, like, punchy, you know?
Right.
But we have no interest in doing that. It's one side is right, one side is wrong, and we can't fix it, but we can sure argue about it.
It would actually have been a fun, decent plot line if, like, BuzzFeed or whoever kept publishing listicles that were garbage, and Joel McHale knew that they were garbage, but he didn't know how to fight BuzzFeed, and the millennials knew that they were garbage, but they didn't know what was not garbage, you know? Okay, and they had to work together.
Let's retitle this to Fight BuzzFeed.
Fight BuzzFeed.
Yeah. And it's like V, but there's no aliens, and you're fighting BuzzFeed.
What's a BuzzFeed?
Clint Eastwood in V. Oh my god, that's great stuff.
Clint Eastwood in V for Vendetta?
No, V, the original miniseries.
Oh my god, yes, the alien one?
Yeah.
Oh lord, I haven't thought about that in years.
Well, think about it again.
I am.
They already tried to make it come back once in the 2010s, and it's only a matter of time.
It's because they didn't use me in it.
I think they made a show like with Morena Baccarin or someone.
Yeah, I didn't watch that.
Yeah, from Firefly. I think that's.
I was too busy watching fucking The Green Indoors.
Well, once and never again. Colin, would you recommend this program?
Nah, I wouldn't. It's trash. It's I love watching Joel McHale. I love watching Stephen Fry. There's not enough Stephen Fry to justify it. And Joel McHale, you got Community. Just go watch that.
It's really not terrible, and you won't hate watching this if you do watch it, but no. It's not good. You shouldn't watch it, and I don't recommend it. You can watch a lot of things. You know, like Netflix and Hulu have literally just put out like 50 hours of original content in the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, and you know, there's new Great British Bake Off on Netflix, and it's just,
and you got Noel Fielding on that thing now.
Oh my God. And Sandy Toxic.
That guy doesn't even know where he is.
Oh, speaking of British people that are just kind of a bit loopy.
All right, so Colin, if anyone wants to find out more about our show,
yeah,
how do they do that?
Well, they could go to Twitter at The Great Indoors. I mean,
no,
shit.
No, that Twitter account is gone forever.
No, it's at soiled. My Mother Podcast. There's no the in there. At My Mother Podcast. You know, you can feel free to follow us, like stuff, chat with us on the old tweets. You can also email us directly. That's mymotherthepodcast@gmail.com. That's about it as far as social stuff goes.
There's also Facebook.
What?
I'm surprised they haven't like made me submit more information to make me prove my identity before I could have a podcast page on there yet.
Are you sure it wouldn't just be a checkbox that says, "Are you a Russian?" And you say no, and they say, "Good
diligence done.
I'm not responsible."
Take that, Congress.
Anyways, I'm gonna go invent my own currency now.
Facebookia.
That's a joke from two months ago.
A country in the middle of the sea.
Oh, like Sealand.
You can also go
onto your local podcast carrier application. Yeah, go to Apple Podcasts. Don't go to fucking Apple.
Don't go to iTunes because it's not real. iTunes. It's not real anymore.
iTunes is dead. Long live Apple Podcasts.
It's going to come out like again next month called iTunes Plus probably.
So that's that's your bourbon restoration. And then
yeah, so go to that and give us 5 stars. And I mean, maybe like you didn't listen to this episode, so you want to give us 5 stars.
Oh, okay. Maybe if your name is Joel McHale, you only give this 4 stars.
Yeah, that seems fair.
What should they leave in their review there?
You can talk about like, which do you prefer, Joel having his head up and talking at you, or like when it's down and talking
at
you? Yeah,
that's, you know what? I want to know that, actually.
I think this could really help us out with a survey, and you know what? I think it could help Joel out.
I think that could really help us out with our survey, and I think that could help Joel out.
Joel, are you there? But, yeah. I mean, like, think of how much... Think of how much time that and like energy that would save him to like not have to go up and down with his head. He could just keep it in one place.
It keeps those neck muscles, you know, like in fighting shape.
I mean, how many calories does it burn? Like, is that a part of his regimen? Do you think?
Maybe he's pretty cut.
All right, with ending on Joel McHale being cut, which is really what I want you to take from this episode.
Yeah,
take it easy, everybody.